From meager beginnings as an adolescent ambulance washer in Moose Jaw, Saskatchewan, to a decade-long legacy of bringing you breaking news before it makes the news, broadcasting live from the studios of Scared Monkeys Radio Network via C-band satellite W3-957, Access Communications Channel 7, and worldwide via digital streaming audio at scaredmonkeysradio.com, it's the Dana Pretzer Show. And now, your host, Dana Pretzer.
Okay, good evening, everyone. May 30th, 2005. We won't forget that date. The date that Alabama teenager Natalie Holloway went missing in Aruba. And the story has gone on. It's hard to believe 10 years. There has been some new breaking information that has come forward. If you've watched Inside Edition, and I believe there'll be some information on entertainment tonight in the next little bit. My next guest, private investigator TJ Ward, is hot on the case and has been since day one. TJ, welcome back to the show.
Hey, thank you very much.
Nice to have you. Now, it's just, you know, I've interviewed Dave and Beth and everyone involved many times, and it just doesn't seem like 10 years, and I'm sure for them, it just seems like yesterday.
It does, and ironically, I spoke to Julie Renfro this morning and by email, and she said the same thing. Wow, I can't believe it's been 10 years. And it is. It's just time flies, and... But we're celebrating the anniversary of 10 years now.
You know, when you look at that, and you've been in the business a long time, justice is served in many different ways. The main suspect in this case, Vandersloot, is in a Peruvian jail right now. But really, all the family is looking for is the truth, are they not?
That's correct. And we're hoping we can get closure for the family and hopefully bring Natalie home.
Well, bringing her home, I think, would be so important and so so telling as far as the story goes. Now, this is a nightmare that any family should not have to live, disappearance of a loved one, and all these years later. I'm always amazed, TJ, of the strength and the bond that families of missing people have. Just talk about the family a little bit and how they have not given up.
Well, they haven't, and I know Dave... very well, and I have been communicating with him for the last few months, and I know he feels real bad because he probably didn't have the relationship with his daughter that he probably should have, and he really feels bad about it, and I think that's why he's on a real witch hunt to find some answers, and I know from even going to the 10-year anniversary when we went with Inside Edition a couple of weeks ago down to Aruba and did a story, that he shared he didn't want to get his hopes up from this new information that we found from this witness. And so he's kind of in limbo right now to the fact that he hopes that this is true and there'll be some closure about it, but he doesn't want to get his hopes up too much and be let down.
Something all my listeners know and anyone who has really followed the case is the Aruban justice system itself is a head-scratcher. You know, as many times as the Vandersloot has confessed and his pattern of lies and their whole system, so to speak, and their investigative process, I want you to comment a little bit, TJ, and then we'll get into what's going on here new. 10 years later, Aruba and Natalie Holloway, what are you finding?
Well, what really bothered me when I first got into this case was about 2 weeks after she went missing. You know, the Aruban authorities took their focus off of Yaron Vandersloot, Deepak, and Satish, and it didn't make any sense because they were the last persons to see Natalie that she was with. And to arrest two security guards, and they kept them, I believe, for 14 days in jail, and to change the focus away from Vandersloot, I knew there had to be some catch. And after my investigating for a period of time, I learned that the lead investigator in the case, Vanderstraten, was Vandersloot's godfather and his dad's best friend and worked in the Minister of Justice from 95 to 98. The night that I went on, after I learned about this information, I went on national TV, almost every channel, and talked about it. And the next night, Tito from the Aruba Today newspaper got on Greta Van Susteren and said they had a warrant for my arrest. And that just showed me what was going on, a little bit of revenge. And ironically, the next day, Dompig, the police chief, called me and apologized and sent me a letter of apology. They said I didn't have a work permit. Now, being in the business for over 33 years, you know, I'd have to know the rules of engagement before I engage in even a case, if I was to take a case in Florida, I have to know the rules before I get there, being I'm licensed in Georgia. So I have to make and take the alternatives to probably get an associate investigator to work with me and pay them to work alongside me in order for me to work in that state. And that's what I would do. I wouldn't go down there on my own and just work and risk the fact of getting caught and causing myself problems. So in the same manner, when I was first invited to Aruba and was sent there for 10 days by the company that has the layered voice analysis, and that's what got me to Aruba, when I have this system called layered voice analysis, and it's 21st century truth technology that can be used by taking the voice in any form of transmission, and I can tell you if you're lying or hiding something.
Well, it's...
All these boys on TV lying... That's when I called the Holloways and told them what I had.
Right.
And that's why I got incorporated into the case. And what they didn't know, that the voice analysis can be used in any language. So after I was informed by the Aruban authorities that they don't even allow the polygraph on the island, I didn't tell them that I could use this without them even knowing it.
You know, it's very interesting, and you bring up a good point. T.J. Ward, private investigator, is here. About the Aruban authorities themselves, and the term cover-up has been used many times, and the protectionism with the Paulus, the father, and the police and all that. It was blatantly obvious very early into the investigation that they were trying to end it quickly with arresting the two security guards and trying to brush off any criticism of this so-called paradise, which is more of a pair of lost, I guess I would say. But it's interesting, TJ, when you talk about voice analysis, you talk about, and as long as you've been in the business, about being able to judge and show evidence as far as the truth goes, whether it's through voice or eye contact or body language or whatever. Let's explain that just a little bit more so that people can understand, because it's very important when it comes to this new witness that we have.
Well, layered voice analysis, it was technology was built by a company named Nemesco in Israel, and they worked with the polygraph for years, the gentleman that's president of Nemesco, and came up with a mathematical formula in a manner in which it works. And I can take any voice transmission, whether it be off of TV, live, over the phone, and I can tell you if you're not being truthful or if you're having stress issues or you're on drugs. I can see all that in a test. And what's unique about it is to be able to use it in any language. And we use it quite a bit. I get law enforcement agencies that call me now, and there are 65 law enforcement agencies across the U.S. that use it, along with the Department of Defense and several federal agencies that utilize it, because it's a very effective tool, unlike the polygraph, where you have to physically have somebody sit down, wire them up with blood pressure and breathing, and the questions, you have 10 control questions usually when you use the polygraph. With the voice analysis, I say, tell me about what happened last Friday. And the more you ramble, the better off it is. So when these boys got on TV, even Paulus Vandersloot, and were talking about what they did and what they didn't do and so on and so forth, I can see the lies. I can see the untruthfulness. I can see the truth they're telling and what's untrue. And I can see the stress, their thinking level. And it works off of involuntary changes of the voice and how a person feels. So Scott Peterson was a good example that I use in my system. Is, if you'll recall, Scott Peterson, when he interviewed with Diane Sawyer the last time when Lacey Peterson went missing, he didn't expect the question when they were talking about when she went missing. Diane Sawyer asked him, what was the last thing you and Lacey were doing? Well, I could see his thinking level going crazy. It works just like a graph, just like on a polygraph. I have seven different levels in the voice analysis that I can see: the lying, the stress, the congenital stress, and then when you're not telling me the truth, it spikes also. So I can see all that in the test. And Scott Peterson's thinking level went nuts. And then when he said, oh, we were decorating a Christmas tree, a false statement, inaccuracies. So we're able to target in at that point, right then and there, with the voice analysis, and ask questions and hear answers about what was going on, about what they just said.
Private investigator.
What I'm saying with what we use with the voice analysis is, my next question is your last answer.
Right.
So it's a very effective 21st century tool.
Private investigator T.J. Ward is here. We're talking about the 10-year anniversary of the disappearance of Natalie Holloway, some new information. Let's talk about this a little bit, and we'll kind of bounce back and forth with a few things. T.J., appreciate your time. The witness, it's been reported in the media, and that's why I want to bring you on tonight, because I want you to clarify some things. There have been so many different reports. You're in De Jong, I hope I'm saying that right. Seems like they're all named that over there. What about him? Is he that new of a witness?
Well, he's not that new of a witness. He is a new of a witness as far as the public's concerned, but he had communicated through a Dutch newspaper, and apparently he had contact with the Aruban authorities in 2008, and they didn't believe him because they knew he was into criminal activity in Aruba, but he has gone public now, and through a Dutch broadcasting newspaper affiliate, and they ironically contacted us, and then shortly after that, De Jong himself contacted my office and told me the story about his sighting of Jeroen Vandersloot and Natalie on the Marriott, behind the Marriott, onto the Marriott property, into the construction site that the Spyglass Towers and the Surf Club was being built at the time. And he went into detail with me and told me that Jeroen was chasing Natalie and then caught up with her. He picked her up, threw her to the ground, then went into a crawl space where the construction site was, the Spyglass Towers, and then placed her in there, wrapped her by her ankles, pulled her in, got back out, and covered her up, covered the spot up with sand. And he is adamant about his story, and he has stuck with what he said. And I had an opportunity to use the layered voice analysis on his conversation with me, and I let one of my analysts conduct the evaluation of the test that I did on him, and they came back and told me that it appeared that he was telling the truth. So one of the questions I did ask him that I'm sure is going to come up, does he want money, compensation for what, or be rewarded? And I went into detail about that with him several times, and he said he's not asking for any money. He wants closure. In fact, he sent an email today to me about gathering some information in Aruba if we could, and he said he would pay for it. He would pay me for my time to try to find this information, which I thought was a little out of character. But we're going to try to follow up. I sent a letter to the Marriott Corporation in Bethesda, Maryland, requesting that they allow us to get in non-public access areas in the Spyglass Tower, and I'm waiting for a response from that.
Now, going back in the investigation, and this goes back many years, TJ, as you know, there was always the thought of the Paulus being complicit in the getting rid of the body, so to speak. I'm trying to say it in a nice way, but I guess there isn't. Now, you have your witness who was discounted by Aruban authorities because of his criminal history. And anyone with a lick of sense will know that the witnesses in these sorts of cases usually aren't the best people in the world. But we have to wonder now, why 10 years later, TJ?
Well, I believe it was in 2008 that he said that he took this to the Aruban authorities. And he said he was scared and he was embarrassed. And I could see that in the test. And he didn't want to be arrested. And as you're well aware, and you know from the history, and just in this case, that there have been witnesses in this case that have been taken into custody in Aruba, and under their government rules, they can take a witness into custody and hold them for a certain amount of days before they have to bring them before the administrator of justice and explain why they're holding them. And they'll put you into prison.
Yeah.
It's not they're going to put you in a cushy hotel room or a cushy jail. They send you to the prison and hold you, even a witness. And he was scared, and he knew he'd been in criminal activity, and he didn't want to be arrested or anything come up on him. He said he was speaking the truth, but he was scared to bring it out.
Now, there's some things, in, as far as the investigation goes, I'm sure you can't share. But as far as this individual, has he spoken to Aruban authorities since then? And have you spoken to Aruban authorities since then? Are they willing to reopen the case?
We have not spoken to the Aruban authorities, and I was trying to, and in my letter that I sent to the Marriott Corporation, I made it perfectly clear that our intentions of coming down there and getting into these non-access areas to the public was in conjunction with the Aruban police. I did not want to rule them out. What I guess bothers me is I've been a law enforcement officer for many, many years, and I'm very familiar with law enforcement. When a witness brings information in regards to a cold case or a crime, they have an obligation, even though knowing who this person is, they have an obligation to follow through with the leads until they rule out that the leads are not good. And as far as I know, as of today, there has been no investigation conducted as to the information that was brought to them in 2008.
Now, some of the reports I'm reading, including here on Scare Monkeys, is the Aruban Chief Prosecutor Eric Orthorf has dismissed the claims of the new witness. When you see a case like this and it comes forward to you, TJ, as a private investigator, whether it's this case or another case, you can't get anything more high profile than this case. And social media that we're using right now to try and get the story out there, what's the difference between 10 years ago and now? The people here have been covering this story since day one, but there's a lot of misinformation out there. There's a lot of haters, as you know, and as I know, and there's a lot of people that just really want some answers. What are your thoughts from 10 years ago to today as far as how the story is going to be covered and continue to be covered?
Well, you know, 10 years ago that every media firm was in Aruba when this was going on. And I can rest assured that their tourist attraction, and as far as their tourist convention, they lost a lot of money. And I would hate to say or hate to see that if they don't do what's proper of taking the necessary measures as a law enforcement agency and investigating something that's brought to their attention, I think it's going to cause them problems. I really do, because you know we're not going to let this go. I mean, there's a lot of American media right now interested in this case, and there's a lot of American media interested about what's going on with this new witness. And it's my understanding that CNN's about to pick up on him this weekend, and he's interviewing with CNN. And I know tomorrow Dave is interviewing with CNN. And they have gone to Meridian, Mississippi, not only for the 10th anniversary, but about this new witness. And so, I mean, we are going to pursue it. I mean, I feel that I have a judicial responsibility now that I know there's a witness, and on behalf of the family to try to bring closure with them. There's something new that's come up. We need to look at it before we rule it out that it's not real.
Absolutely, and we can all agree with that. TJ Ward, private investigators here. One of my listeners sends a question, TJ. Isn't it possible the witness is telling the truth and that this is where she was killed, but then as Jorn himself has confessed, but it was never used, that Natalie was then disposed of in the ocean? Thoughts on that?
If she was disposed into this spot, And human remains were in this crawl space, per se, if we take our cadaver dogs there, we'll hit on the scent that body was there.
At one time, yeah. No,
we have cadaver dogs, and I will tell you a little story about the dogs that we use. Tracy Sargent with K9 SARS works with me hands-on. And ironic, we have a TV show coming up called Justice Ward, and Tracy's going to be on the TV show with me with the cadaver dogs. And she was hired by the History Channel to go. There's a Revolutionary War. We all know about the Civil War, but there was a Revolutionary War here in the South also. She was hired by them a couple of months ago to go out into a battlefield where the Revolutionary War was, and that dogs that she has were able to hit and mark spots where bodies were 138 years ago.
Isn't that something? Wow. That's amazing.
So rest assured, if there was a body in that location 10 years ago, that dog's going to hit on it. Even if it's been moved or whatever, we're going to know it was there.
And that's all
the lead for the Aruban authorities.
Those are all pieces of the puzzle. Yeah.
Yeah, and we're, you know, Dave Holloway is willing to fund us going down there for this new information. And again, we don't want to put any false hope in his mind, but we have the resources to go forth to follow up with this lead. And I'm going to keep pressure on the Aruban authorities when we go to them after I hear from the Marion. We don't want to cause them any tourism problems. I mean, Aruba's a great place to go, but there is an American missing. It's been missing 10 years now. And if there's any hope that we can find her remains and bring her home, we're going to do that.
And we would all hope that the government would, because it has kind of disappeared off the government's radar. You have the attorneys and the PIs like yourself and others that have kept it going. But yeah, you're right. It's a United States citizen that's missing, and there needs to be some answers. T.J. Ward, I want to get into another quick story with you here in a couple of minutes. We only have about 7 or 8 minutes left. But obviously, your witness, DeJong, and whatever else you find there, and yes, you have an obligation to follow things up, and hopefully the Holloways get the answers. But what about some of the other people involved in this case in the past? The Kelpos, for example, what's going on with them? And they still know what happened. I'm sure they do.
Well, you know, the Kelpo brothers were targeted out by Dr. Phil. And if you'll recall, Jamie Skeeter with California Polygraph.
Sure.
And another, Harold Copas, went to Aruba, and they wired a hotel room with Deepak. And there were some questions that came up about an audio tape when they interviewed him, and a video about, you could see him shaking his head no, but they said the sound bite sounded like he said yes, he had sex with Natalie. And that was aired by Dr. Phil, and shortly thereafter was a lawsuit brought against Dr. Phil by Deepak and Satish and also Jamie Skeeter of California Polygraph. And ironically, about 6 weeks ago, that case was finally dismissed and in California.
After all those years.
Dr. Phil's been on the hook for the last, since 2007 when he broadcasted that on Jay Leno. So,
you know, it's going to be interesting. And I mentioned Entertainment Tonight, and you're saying CNN and the other news agencies that pick up the story and continue on with it. Are you able to comment if the American government is helping in any way?
We have no contact with the American government right now. And you know that the FBI, when they were down there for one purpose. They had no authority, was to just to give good advice about their investigative techniques. I do want to add one thing and tell you, my office has been doing some extensive research into this area where this new witness, DeJong, claims he saw Natalie buried. And the foundation, everybody, and I've heard comments already, they said, well, the foundation was on a slab. But what we have learned today, that the foundation of the Spyglass Tower was the first floating slab ever put in Aruba. The company that built this building used what's called a floating slab, so it's in sections. So there would be a crawl space. That's what the interesting part is about what we just learned. It's a prefab slab. It's called floating slab, and that's what this hotel is built on, the Spyglass Tower and the Surf Club. So there may be some validity to this, what's going on. And the Aruban authorities need to take the judicial responsibility as a governing agency on that island and follow up with an investigative lead from a cold case. And exactly what we're doing in the private sector, they need to do it as a government agency. They need to be responsible. Even though they don't believe this witness from their prior convictions of him or whatever, they still have a witness that's come forward and not only gone public with it, and now going on public U.S. television around the world. And so I think it would be to their advantage to not to cause problems with their tourism, because a lot of their money comes from the United States. And they need to take their judicial responsibility and follow up with this lead until they find that it's not a good lead, or if it is a good lead. She may be there, or she may have been there. So we need to find out that answer before we conclude that we're not going forth with this.
Yeah, it will be interesting. Before I let you go, TJ, good work on the Union City Police Chief cover-up. Let's talk about that a little bit.
Okay. I represent a lady named Frieda Waiters and her son, who was 19 years old in 2011, was in the vicinity of a call that was put out, shots fired, and approximately 12 police officers showed up at the scene. Arias Waiters, who had nothing to do with this, the shots being fired or whatever, started to ease away from the scene and the crowd. And a SWAT officer in an unmarked car saw him walking up toward, and he was walking home is what he was doing, and walking up towards the wooded area. So the SWAT officer went around the building and encountered him behind the building. And when he encountered him, he complied, got on the ground like the police officer asked him. The police officer gets on behind him, one knee in his back, puts one handcuff on, and then as he goes to put the second handcuff on, he starts resisting. Unbeknown to this officer, had just got back from Afghanistan and a military tour in the reserves, and later discovered that he had PTSD, post-traumatic stress disorder. And after him not complying and pulling his arm out from under him, there was a little shake and struggle, and the officer put two bullets in his back.
Oh, no.
There was no weapon. The officer got up, and the superior officer got on the scene. He said that never mentioned about a gun. He said he was in fear. He thought he had a gun, and he popped him twice in the back.
Yeah.
After the superior officer told him to go back to his car and stay there, he went back to the station with the chief of police. They spent 3 hours behind closed doors. And when he came out from that meeting with the chief, his story changed. And the superior officer was first on the scene, said, "That's not what you told me on the scene." So it went on. It went before the grand jury. An in-depth investigation was done. The Fulton County District Attorney's Office brought in a former DEA internal affairs guy who's now in the private sector, does nothing but police shootings. And he determined not only was it a bad shooting, but the officer had lied to law enforcement. It's been sitting on the table. Ms. Waiters was adamant that her son was murdered. They hired us. I've had the case for almost a year. I knew several of the officers because not only that was the first place I ever policed, and my father retired there as a commander in 1998. I was a drug agent there for almost 11 years as a reserve while I had my company. So I've known all the officers there. There was been a lot of turmoil from the chief of police up there with police officers that's been there 20 plus years that had personal knowledge of this police chief. There was a lot of animosity. A lot of them had been terminated, fired, or scared to say anything, because in fear of losing their job. And you've been in a police agency for 20, 25 years. Where are you going to get a job if you get fired?
Right.
So everybody was kind of hush-hush and scared doing anything. There were two officers, one that got terminated, who filed a lawsuit and settled with the city, and a second officer who was on suspension because he couldn't meet the physical requirements. 26-year veteran. They suspended him for 3 months without pay. Now think about that, 3 months without pay. And he told me after I had met with him that he said this shooting's been bothering him. He was the first superior officer on the scene of the shooting. And he did a whistleblower with the local TV station here and went public. I took my investigation to the district attorney's office and could not get a response out of him, at which time there was a Rainbow Push member here, which is a black coalition, that knew the district attorney, who set up a meeting with Ms. Waiters and myself. And I told the district attorney some of the stuff that I knew. We had learned there was four other instances since before Ms. Waiters' son was murdered that this officer who had PTSD was involved in the same situation. He almost shot somebody. He fired his weapon on three different occasions. And I did an open record request for his personnel file and found nothing in there about these incidences, nothing.
It was empty.
Which really bothered me.
Yeah.
So after I didn't get a good response out of the district attorney, because he was convinced the grand jury didn't indict him, so that was it.
Wow.
I took my investigation to the FBI, which they have now opened an investigation and interviewed these two witnesses that I brought to them. And now that the media has gone forth, the district attorney's office, it aired Monday night, the district attorney's office has gone public and have reopened the case.
Good.
So there was a cover-up, not only to the fact that these two officers in December heard the police chief say, when the PBA attorney was coming to the police station on another shooting, which I might add was never reported to the district attorney's office, the chief says, according to these officers that I interviewed and what they told the FBI, y'all don't need to bring your PBA attorney in here. He said, I'll take care of everybody that's here. Don't worry about it. He said, just like I did Luther Lewis in the shooting with Arias Waiters.
Oh, no.
Yeah. I got that taken care of. You can see he didn't go to prison, and he should have.
Yep.
So the government knows all about this, what's going on. It's out in the open. So it remains to be seen what's going to transpire, whether they do take the case back to the grand jury and discipline some officers that intentionally covered this case up.
Well, it's fantastic work from your organization, TJ. And listen, we're out of time. I wish you all the best. Please stay in touch, and I'm sure there'll be more to report on the Holloway case in the days or week ahead.
Matter of fact, I'm going to be on Entertainment Tonight sometime before the 30th, and also on Anderson Cooper, who is also following up with this story along with myself and Dave Holloway.
Right on. We'll be in touch. Thanks, TJ.
Thanks, Dana. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. That's attorney TJ, or attorney, attorney Robin Sachs is coming up, but that's private investigator TJ Ward with new news on the Holloway case. Like I say, justice is served in many different forms. It doesn't have to be the way you and I expect, but definitely some answers and something that we call the truth needs to happen. My name is Dana Pretzer. This is Scared Monkeys Radio. We're going to be back with Robin Sachs, a former assistant district attorney and law enforcement instructor, crime reporter, you name it, she's done it, and get her thoughts on 10 years with Natalie Holloway being gone. I'll be right back. Okay, we're back. This is Scared Monkeys Radio. Always a pleasure to have Robin Sachs on the program. She's a former assistant district attorney. She's done work in television, an author, and now she's back in the courtroom. Robin, how are you?
I'm good, thank you. How are you?
I'm good. 10 years for Natalie Holloway, May 30th, 2005. God, you know, for the family, and I've interviewed them all, it must just seem like yesterday, but what are your thoughts 10 years later?
Well, you know, when I think of the Natalie Holloway case, I actually think of Red, I think of Dana Presser, I think of Scared Monkeys, I think of Blink on Crime, I think of the birth of internet crime sleuthing. I mean, it is a monumental case in my mind in terms of blogs and internet breaking crime stories, news, and people don't really realize that impact. And when you think about that, that was only 10 years ago,
yeah.
not just in terms of the pain, the loss, the lack of closure, and all the other stuff that you think of with the crime, but just in terms of how the internet is used and how you guys were so ahead of the curve on that. So kudos to you guys.
Well, Red was, and Tom and the others, I came in a little bit later, but they were first with this story, and sadly it's 10 years later. You know, we like to use that term closure, Robin, but I think it's the truth that the family would be happy with and to be able to bring their daughter home. But Joran Vandersloot is serving a prison term for murder in Peru, is not one who tells the truth very much. What about that all these years later? An old witness who's a new witness, and they're following it up. I just had the private investigator, T.J. Ward, who's working on that part of it on the show. What about that all these years later? Do you think that this will go anywhere?
You know, when I think of Natalie Holloway case, the case that I think of that's most similar, and funny, I got an email on this literally just today, is the JonBenet Ramsey case.
Yeah.
I mean, and when I think of Joran Vandersloot, I automatically also kind of, in the other case, think of John Mark Carr.
Ugh.
Except for the fact that, Joran Vandersloot is actually serving time in another case. But I don't know. You know, you mentioned the word closure. I don't know that we'll ever get closure in this case, because it was, no matter what information you get, unless you, for whatever reason, end up getting some scientific evidence that is corroborated by some testimonial type of evidence, some statements, you're never going to really believe. I mean, as long as, Joran Vandersloot's mouth moving, lies are coming out, as far as I'm concerned. So there's no real story there. And this new witness, even if he is credible and has information, and of course you're going to follow up on the lead, with all of the corruption that happened in that case and all of the missteps and how that investigation went down, I don't know how you could ever feel closure.
And that's a good point. The prosecutor, Eric Orthoff or something, I'm not sure what his last name is saying that he's dismissing the claims of this witness because of his past history. Now, you, as a former DA, if you had a witness come to you with a past history, I bet you didn't dismiss every time that someone came forward, because a lot of these witnesses aren't the best people themselves.
Listen, I mean, if you think about every single gang case, every Crip and Blood case out there, I mean, one day you're a victim, the next day you're a defendant. I mean, there's a lot of people who have a bad past, who are untruthful and bad people, and then there are a lot of people with bad pasts who, could be trusted in other circumstances. I mean, I don't think you can just dismiss anyone or believe someone based on their past. I mean, isn't it that the same in reverse? Just because someone's a cop, a priest, whatever, doesn't make them good, truthful, and credible. Just as if someone has served time and done bad acts, doesn't make them necessarily uncredible either. And in a case like this, there's a difference. There's a difference in getting evidence and getting information with the hopes of piecing together a case versus getting evidence and getting information with the hopes of getting a conviction. Right now, we're not sitting here. There's no jury trial going on right now. There's no, guilt beyond a reasonable doubt that we're looking at. We're looking at getting information to get information to get information.
Yeah. No, absolutely. Robin Sachs is here. We're talking about Natalie Holloway 10 years later. Now, you and I have talked about this case many, many times over the years, along with other stories and interviews that you've done and I've done. Now, 10 years later, and you were so kind to mention how social media picked up on this very early, what about these styles of cases? Now, I know for a fact that 90% of my audience will never let this go. They'll keep thinking about it and reporting about it and talking about it. And with other cases that are out there, 10 years later, and the way that social media is now, you can believe some stuff, a lot of stuff you can't. And of course, the haters are out there and the dark side are out there. But what about 10 years ago compared to now and reporting?
Well, I mean, I think, first of all, I mean, yes, with every good and, good tool, good resource, good thing, there's negative and bad. that's out there. But there, you know, the tools that you can use from an online and reporting arena are incredible now. I mean, there used to be a time where the only way you could get into a press conference or go to a crime scene or get into anywhere is with, you know, credentials from a recognized national media or local media outlet that's, you know, an actual codified, bona fide kind of place. You know, now you can get credentials as a blogger. You can get credentials as someone who has a website, and you can disseminate information quickly. I mean, and you look at so many cases now that we would never, ever, ever, ever know in both good and bad ways. You know, look at Baltimore. Look at these school rape cases. Look at some of these cases that are small town, you know, Steubenville. These are these small town, little tiny stories that, but for hashtags and at signs and Reddit and other types of platforms, people wouldn't know about it. So the only thing, so that's the good. The bad of that is you kind of, we've also lost a little bit of perspective too, I think. I think that we don't really, you know, get all the information. We don't know really how bad anything is. There is much more sensationalism because, you know, the idea of going viral all of a sudden has some weight to it that's different than, you know, just having eyeballs on it in traditional ratings.
You mentioned JonBenet Ransby and that creepazoid John Mark Carr, good Lord. Now, there's another case that I'm sure the family deserves the truth, and I think justice needs to be served. What about that? How do you take a case like that all these years later? And I know you had some dealings with that individual, Mr. Carr. How do you do something with a guy like that? Truth, not truth, or in between?
I mean, the first of all is, you know, felony jerk, felony asshole, sorry, I know I'm not probably supposed to say that, felony creep, felony, all those other things, unfortunately, are not in penal codes right now. And so, you know, with someone like a John Mark Carr, for example, you know, you have to look at the crime that he is actually committing right now. Now, I was involved in some cases some years back where there was harassment and other charges. But I think some of the biggest problems is with someone like a John Mark Carr or someone out there is they're so, people are so terrified to even come forward and say anything that, you know, that and without that, law enforcement can't do anything.
You know, last question. We hear of civil rights investigations, especially with Baltimore and the other cases with Zimmerman and others. Here we have a case of a young Alabaman teenager, an American citizen, has been missing on in a foreign country, an island, whatever you call it. What about her civil rights, and what about the government? Could the government of the United States do more for the Holloway family and to help find Natalie? I think they could.
Oh, I agree. I mean, I think the matter, you know, the fact of the matter is how much pressure are our elected officials and our, is our government willing, you know, how much are they willing to put on the line, you know, for particular cases that involve over crime victims? And the reality is that it's unfortunate how little that power is used in that way to effectuate justice. It's something that kind of seems to be something that we don't see a lot of. But I do think that from a civil rights point of view, I mean, you know, even if you look at the Amanda Knox case, I mean, we'll think whatever you want to think, whether you think she's a murderer or not. I mean, you still had one of our own being charged with a crime over there, and you didn't really see the national government get involved. You saw, you know, Seattle get involved, but you didn't see any national involvement.
Still a citizen, and it'll be interesting to see where this goes. What about you? What are you up to?
You know, my new hashtag, Better Call Sachs. Practicing law, doing criminal defense, doing family law. Tweet me, email me with your legal questions. I'm taking them. It's so fun to be back using my brain again, not to just sit here and talk about other cases, but to have my head into other cases. And that's the reality. There are so many cases every day where people, you know, are rubbing their pennies together to bring about justice, whether it be about bringing back a loved one in a custody case. I mean, even the sensational Kelly Rutherford case. I mean, that's a family law case that a lot of people deal with all the time, where custodial rights are taken away from the wrong people, where you know, victims are sexually assaulted, whether someone's wrongfully convicted. These are the kinds of cases out there that happen each and every day that don't get the media attention, and those are the cases that I'm working on.
Absolutely. You're always a sweetheart, and welcome on the show anytime. Thank you, my dear.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye. That's Robin Sachs. She's also been around for a day or two covering this case. The bottom line on the Holloway disappearance is that there's an American citizen that's missing, and the government of the United States needs to do more. The family has tried, others have tried, investigators, money, tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of dollars, a corrupt system, cover-up, name it, you, whatever. Someone who was admitted several times to taking this young girl's life, but nothing was ever done. Another young girl lost her life because of this individual, and now he's making comments in the media. Aruba paradise, or para lost, or para hell, whatever you want to call it. You know, you could talk about Tito and Julia Renfro and gag at the same time, because those that were there, and a lot of the monkeys have been covering this since day one, Red himself was there, and those that have talked to the family and saw the hurt with this whole case, whether it's 10 years, one day, or 10 years, 2 days, it should be tomorrow that Natalie Holloway gets to go home and be with her family. And Joran van der Sloot, I don't know, will ever pay for it in a court of law, because the Aruban system is so blanked up, but he will pay eventually because he's the one who admits himself that he was last with her before she lost her life. It's just that simple. So in the days and weeks to come, stay tuned to scaredmonkeys.com and, of course, here at the radio station, and we'll be covering this to the best of our ability. There's a forum at scaredmonkeys.com, a lot of great people there that have given their heart and soul to see answers in this case and other cases where the missing still need to be found. That's it. I hope you enjoyed tonight's show. My name's Dana Pretzer. We'll see you again real soon.
You've been listening to the Dana Pretzer Show on Scared Monkeys Radio. We invite you to discuss tonight's program with other listeners by joining us at scaredmonkeysradio.com, where you'll find program archives, links to tonight's guest websites, and further information regarding tonight's topics. Scared Monkeys Radio is a production of scaredmonkeys.com. Thanks for listening.